Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Freedom Above Fortune radio show. I am the agent for truth, Joe Bannister, your host. Happy Saturday morning to you. The Freedom Above Fortune radio show comes to you live, courtesy of Liberty Works Radio Network. Tell your friends they can listen to this great network and support it by visiting lwrn.net. Liberty Works Radio Network brings you radio programming you will not hear anywhere else. As always, I ask you to support Liberty Works Radio Network so that this kind of radio programming can continue. When you visit lwrn.net, please consider clicking on the Join Donate button in the upper left-hand corner of the homepage. Given the many blessings God has bestowed upon our country, I dedicate every show to our Father in Heaven, so I always start the show by praying as Jesus instructed us in Matthew chapter 6. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our debts, as we forgive our debtors. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Amen. Well, our country is indeed in deep trouble, and I urge everyone to fervently pray for God's blessings on our country. Let's redouble our efforts to obey his commandments, especially refraining from taking the Lord's name in vain. I invite you to join my email list by visiting my website at freedomabovefortune.com and clicking on mailing list on the left-hand side of the homepage. I also invite you to keep paper and pen handy to copy down important information. And for those who are new to the show, I'm a former special agent with the IRS Criminal Investigation Division. And I've been basically speaking about liberty and tax-related matters ever since my resignation in 1999. My guest for today's show is a gentleman named Gerhard Link. He grew up and spent a good deal of his life in Germany prior to and during World War II. And I thought it would be very informational and educational for all of us to invite Gerhard on the show. And so we're going to spend this show just talking about Gerhard's life, and I'm sure you'll be as fascinated as I have been in learning just tidbits from Gerhard. So Gerhard, welcome to the Freedom Above Fortune radio show.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for coming on. Well, I'd like to start, if you could just briefly talk, Gerhard, about your growing up years in Germany. Of course, we're looking for a comparison and contrast to the time prior to the Nazis coming to power, and then when they came to power, because I'm sure you noticed quite a difference. So could you give us just a brief description of what it was like growing up as a young person in Germany, including what year you were born?
I was born 1926, and there was a lot of depression going on at that time. My father was a professional furniture maker, really professional, and then and his company went bankrupt, so he went to go independent on himself and move to the town where he was raised then later on, which was not far from Stuttgart in West Germany. And then we lived in that town for about, I think it was from 1926 to 1933. And that time during the Depression, many people struggled for an income and for organization. There was a runaway inflation. Money was printed all the time, which was very worthless. And then, in all this, in this Weimar Republic, suddenly this man appeared, who demanded a turn from the chaos to organization, and my father said, this man is not good. He brings nothing but blood, if not blood and dead soul. So this went in the 1930s, I think it was 1933. He came to power, and immediately my parents were outcast because he didn't agree with his new push for hailing the swastika flag and discarding the old flag, and so my parents were under blacklist from the beginning. But most everybody was in favor of just a new government taking over, including all churches. They were very weak in resistance against Hitler. It was 1933.
So what was it like, could you explain the significance of the swastika? I mean, what did the Nazis say that represented?
Oh, that represented the new order for the German Reich country. That means the German country. The flag before was black and white and red, and now they came with a swastika in the new sign of. It was a marking. It was a mark sign for the cross. You know, if you see it, it's the swastika is a cross with hooks on it.
Oh, so did you say a mocking, like he was trying to mock the
cross? Oh, yeah, it was a mocking. It was a mock against the cross, yeah.
Wow.
Actually, but many people didn't realize that. But it was a mocking thing against the cross of Christ.
Wow. Now, did your parents recognize that from the start?
No, my parents never bought a swastika. When there was a celebration for the town, everybody hung out a swastika flag. My parents never bought a swastika flag. My parents never hung out a flag, and for this they were hated and lost all their clientele.
So was it a pretty rapid? In other words, this fervor among most of the German people. They bought into what Hitler and the Nazis offered.
Oh, yeah, 99% bought in with great enthusiasm.
Wow! And your parents had not only the knowledge but the courage to say, "Well, we know this is wrong, and we're not going to go along."
Mm-hmm.
Wow! And you mentioned, you know, before the show that there are many small towns throughout Germany. And there were generally Protestant towns and Catholic towns, and there wasn't a lot of mingling among the towns. But you said most of the churches just went along, so most of the people just didn't realize what this was all about, and yet your parents just kind of, they had a feeling. They could see.
Joe. Almost everybody went along. I saw the swastikas being marched in the churches and celebrated and asked by the priest, and blessed by the priest and blessed by the pastors as the new blessing coming upon the country.
Okay, I see.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I remember that as a kid, how these flags were marched in the church. And the bells were ringing, and almost everybody was enthused about it. This is the new thing now.
I see. So as far as your earliest memories of your parents describing their feelings about the swastika and the Nazis, what do you remember being their core issue?
I remember one thing, Joe. For instance, when the people came out of church after marching of the flags inside the church, and they had the Nazis had set up a wood board, and when the people came out from the church building, they were asked in favor of Hitler to drive a nail into that board. And the Nazis, the new Nazi brownies, brown uniform people, he wishes that everybody who drives a two-door nail in that board. And he also wishes that those that refuse to drive a nail in. And that's why my parents were immediately put on the blacklist because they didn't drive a nail in.
So did your parents recognize that what was going on was a peer pressure and they were trying to get everybody to buy in, and your parents knew intuitively that there's something wrong when they're looking?
Because of the godlessness that my parents spotted everywhere. They were totally rude people. Most of these people, you know, the German Nazi, actually says the German National Labor Party. So the Nazis said most of the Nazis were not educated people at all. They were just common people who suddenly felt to get a big boost for their life.
I see. And was it apparent from the very beginning that not only were they rude, but they were godless? I mean, atheistic kind of people.
Yeah, they were from the beginning. And so my father called in some. My father called some ministers, lay ministers, to come to town to speak to people, and for this he was also mocked, very, very strongly mocked from the beginning.
Are you saying marked is an M-A-R-K?
No, mocking, M-O-C-K.
Okay.
Yeah.
You said that your father basically lost a lot of his clientele.
So indeed my mom. My mom had a small grocery store. You know, the grocery corner? That's what my mother did.
I see. Now, people are today in contemporary times, we hear a lot about how the Nazis, had a disliking for the Jewish people. Mm-hmm. How early did you see that manifest itself?
This did not happen for quite some time. I think about three or four years, when I was a teenager, I saw the things, the hatred that was spread against the Jews, and they were constantly considered as no good people that need to be reduced or asked to leave the country and things like that. And I remember when I was 10 or 12 years old, I remember seeing a few Jews with a yellow star on their jacket.
I see. So I wasn't aware that prior to the Jewish persecution becoming very apparent, would it be fair to say that the Germans, like your own family, who opposed the Nazis, which unfortunately there wasn't very many of them, but those that did received immediate persecution?
Not the persecution, not to the point that they were arrested. They were first treated in an ugly way. They were on the blacklist. They were not popular.
Like outcasts.
They were not given things that they wanted to buy and things like that. So there was always a pressure on these people that did not agree with all the new government.
Okay, so like they're treated like outcasts in their own country.
Sort of, yeah.
I see. Well, Gerhard, we have a break coming up.
Okay.
Our guest is Gerhard Link, and he's sharing with us the amazing story of what it was like to grow up in pre-Nazi Germany and as the Nazis took over power. And we'll be right back after these messages.
Join the Cavalcade to Freedom. The Cavalcade back to constitutional government. Climb on board and do your part to proclaiming liberty throughout the land. Join and support Liberty Works Radio Network Fellowship. To view the strategic plan, to spread the word, and to get information on joining, go to www.libertyworksradionetwork.com or call the fellowship office at 410-857-5444. That's 410-857-5444 to join the Cavalcade to Freedom. America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on. Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting.
I'm here to give you anything you like. You want free college, energy, mortgages, whatever you like. You have come to the right place. Why? I'll tell you why. Who can take your money?
Who can take your money?
With a twinkle in their eye.
A twinkle in their eye.
Take it all away and give it to some other guy. The government.
The government.
The government can. Tax the sunrise.
Who can tax the sunrise?
Who can tax the trees?
Who can tax the trees?
Let you run a business and collect up all the fees. The government.
The government.
Oh, the government can.
The government can.
And the government can, cause they mix it up with lies and make it all taste good.
Make it all taste good.
The government takes everything we make to pay for healthcare, climate change, pollution. Throw away the Constitution. And who can give a bailout?
Who can give a bailout?
Tell us to behave.
Tell us to behave.
And make the founding fathers roll over in the grave. The government.
The government.
Oh, the government can.
The government can.
And the government. It up well as I make it all taste good.
Make it all taste good.
The government takes everything we make. They're power hungry and malicious. Their economics are fictitious. Soon we'll have to eat our dishes.
Delicious.
Oh, who can be a failure? In so many ways.
In so many ways.
A raise, the government.
The government.
Oh, the government can.
The government can.
And the government can, cause they make it up without a thing. It all tastes good.
Make it all taste good.
And your Uncle Sam can, cause he mixes it well as it makes it all taste good.
Makes it all taste good.
And I feel so good, cause the government says I should.
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on. Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting.
In 1987, some inner city first graders were promised a college education. Now, this promise didn't come from a wealthy corporation. It came from Oral Lee Brown, who saved a large portion of her modest income every year for these children.
She told Ms. Brown, you can't do everything I said, no, but we need to do more.
And she did more by sending 19 kids to college, helping others pass it on.
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on. Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting. now live from coast to coast and around the globe. More real talk, the kind you want, on Liberty Works Radio Network.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the Freedom Above Fortune radio show. Our guest is Gerhard Link. He grew up prior to and during the Nazi regime in Germany, and I'm just completely fascinated by this opportunity to talk about these historic issues. During the break, Gerhard was describing to me the economic circumstances that appeared to help usher Hitler into power and made the Germans, you know, clamor for some kind of relief. So, Gerhard, could you describe again that, well, you know, you did it for me, the Weimar Republic and how it existed prior to the Nazis, and about inflation, and especially that anecdotal story about your mother and how much cash she had to have to purchase groceries and get paid.
I remember my mom often came home with a month's salary and could hardly get anything. I remember we had a tablecloth in our house for a long time, for which she had to pay 34,000 mark, the Reichsmark, 34,000 mark a month salary for one tablecloth. Another time she had forgotten to go to cashier's month salary into food. When she came two days later to the butcher store, she got two sausages for a month's salary. That's how fast the inflation was running away. And so that's what happened those days. That's why people were so panicky, and they were so in panic to get some order into the country again.
So literally your mother worked for a month, and I got a month's worth of salary, and all that purchased was two sausages.
That is correct, because she came 2 days late, 2 days late cashing, and that's how fast the inflation moved.
And was this even prior to Hitler's rise?
Exactly. That's what Hitler promised he would bring order to the place. It's exactly before Hitler.
So basically, this Weimar Republic, which existed prior to Hitler, you said that during the break there were 40 different parties, and they were basically inept and incompetent, and their incompetence was so bad that they were printing money like crazy, and so the German people were starving because their money wasn't worth anything.
That is correct. That's right. Yeah.
Wow.
There was totally chaos. There was no order in the place.
So meanwhile, Hitler is around, and he's going to take advantage of a situation that he can take advantage of.
When he came to power, yeah, he said that's what he would do. That's why people voted for him.
I see. So then someone who opposed Hitler, like your family, was looked at as, are you crazy? Do you want to stay with...
Exactly. That's what they said. Yeah, that's what they said. They said, so my friends did not go for it, and my father had his own furniture store, his own furniture workshop.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother had a grocery store, and when my friends showed clear attitude about this evil man, because they considered him as a murderer from the beginning. And when my parents refused to hang out a swastika, and when my parents did not say Heil Hitler, just like everybody else did, then they said, well, if you don't say Heil Hitler, if you don't have a swastika, then we will not come to your store anymore. We will not be your client. We will not be your clients anymore.
Oh, I see. So I'm curious. It was interesting that you used the term murderer from the beginning, because that's what they described Satan as. Why did your parents, or how did they know, even before the Jewish persecution, before the really nasty things that history showed us, how did they know that early that, I mean, to actually call him a murderer? What did they see?
That is hard to explain. But if you want to record it, my parents were dedicated Christian people, and they had secret contact with other dedicated Christian followers of Christ. And they had somehow, they had received among each other inspirations of what's going to happen. For instance, one of my aunts said one time to my father, she said, "Wilhelm, the SS people are Hitler's bloodhounds."
I see. So they really had a, like you say, inspiration, perhaps even a divine inspiration to.
Exactly. That's the only information they had.
Wow. That's,
yeah.
And when there's inspirations like that, when there's really little to no human understanding for why it came, then it's a pretty good indication that, you know, those divine inspirations are coming to help those who are receiving those inspirations warn others.
Say that again, please.
To receive an inspiration like that, and then to have the courage to try to tell others, but those other Germans aren't receiving that same divine inspiration, and so.
Oh no! This was only a small group,
right,
that had this information. Only a small group, a small trustworthy group of people.
I understand. All right. So your father was being mocked. There was an actual situation where everyone was supposed to pound a nail into the board to show their support for the Nazis.
Yeah.
And your parents, did your parents just...
My parents did not do it.
Did they, was it a kind of thing where they, everybody stood in a line and they just walked down the street towards the house?
Yeah, they came out of the church building and they walked toward that board. No uniform Nazis, brownies were standing behind this board. And most everybody walked by and drove a nail in and to satisfy these monsters, these new guys. But my parents didn't do it. So I remember that when I was a kid. I think I was 8 or 9 years old.
That is just astounding. So they did actually get in the line and come up to the board and then not...
The people, from out of church, yeah.
But your parents walked up to the board and then just walked
My parents walked around. My parents did not walk to the board.
They walked around the board.
They walked around the board, and so they were immediately marked because my parents were known by name, you know.
And basically this board was placed outside of the church, so after...
Under a linden tree in the marketplace in front of the church.
So that all the parishioners, everybody coming out who knew your parents, would immediately see.
Oh yeah, it was a public thing. It was the talk of the town.
Wow! Talk about courage.
And from then on, the conspiracy against my parents, got tougher and tougher and harder and harder.
So tell me, as you were approaching, but maybe we could get into then Hitler, you know, his rise to power in terms of, Germany recognizing him as their leader. What kind of other changes did your parents and you experience as happening?
Recognizing Hitler?
Just like the changes from when you were a young boy to the kind of changes that Hitler...
Economically, things got better, but only economically.
Okay.
Yeah. See. So things got better because what we did not know is where the stabilization for money came from was Hitler created new jobs. But how did he create new jobs? We didn't know. But he created new jobs by building arms again.
By building a war machine, basically.
By building weapons again, and the so-called Siegfried Line. You know, the West Wall, the bunkers against France.
Right.
So this is what some people gave work, you know, and so the money when the money was, the money, the German mark was changed into Reichsmark, you know, from D-mark. It was, so the currency was changed in the, and it was accepted as valuable. So I'm going to get confused here. Anyway, economically, it's got better. But it did not get rid of all the churches. The pastors and the priests had a rough time. To get people in the church faithfully like before, because there was a new enthusiasm. We don't need God anymore. We have now a new government.
So not only did your parents knew that there was a godlessness to the Nazis, but then as soon as they really came into power, the people began to be godless as well.
Well, the people were not so much interested anymore. It was a thing to be laughed at. You know, to be Christian was a thing to be laughed at.
I see. So as you were growing in age, now you also mentioned before you came on the show that Pope Benedict, who you know many people know, was born and raised in Germany.
Yeah.
That he and you are very similar in age. You said he's about 6 months.
Yeah, he was a half a year younger than I am.
I see. And because of that, Pope Benedict basically missed being drafted just by that.
Yeah, otherwise he would have been drafted like I was.
Wow.
When the time came, yeah.
So are there any other experiences prior to you getting drafted that you'd like to describe?
Let me think a second. this was years later when I was drafted. I had to go to finish my apprenticeship.
Yes.
And there was a rule at that time: everybody in Germany had to finish an apprenticeship, either in day school, apprenticeship, or some trade, something. You had to be certified as completed, whatever job you want to do, and have to complete it. And I could not been drafted before my apprenticeship was finished. So that by then I was 16 years old.
Well, at 16 you were at least attempting to get certified in the trade, because was that basically a law? Do you remember? Because we only have about a minute left. Do you remember? Then what year were you drafted in?
I have to think back now.
Or how old were you?
Yeah. How old?
Yes.
I was 16 years old.
You were 16 years old when you were drafted. So the Nazis were drafting boys that were only 16 years old?
Of course, I was in the army before I was. I had completed my 17 years old.
Wow.
Yeah. We did not have a beard, but we had guns. We were given guns.
That must have been an incredible experience.
Yeah, it was awful. We were just shaking all the time in front of these monsters in uniform.
So the basically the commanding officers or the military people who were training you were much older than you?
Yes, they were. They were much older. They were. Most of them were at least 20 years old.
Wow. So you.
But this is now another episode now.
Right. Right. Well, we're about ready to go to the break. So
okay.
I'll just let the listeners know. Our guest is Gerhard Link. He grew up. Was born prior to the Nazi regime coming to power in Germany. And he was drafted by the Nazis at the age of 16. His parents were mocked and mistreated because they could see the evil in Hitler before the rest of the country did, as a small group of Germans did. And so we'll be right back after these messages, and we really appreciate you joining us at Freedom Above Fortune radio show, freedomabovefortune.com, and agentfortruth.com.
Thank you. America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting.
If I could have a heart-to-heart with my dad.
If I could have a heart-to-heart with my mom.
I'd probably talk about girls.
We'd probably talk about girls.
Anything, boys, school, clothes.
You'd be amazed at what they'll talk about if you give them the chance.
If I had a heart-to-heart with my dad.
If it were real heart-to-heart, I'd tell my parents what I'm going through.
I'd probably talk to them about growing up.
I'd probably tell my dad that I wish we'd do more stuff together.
I don't think it has to be a heart-to-heart. I just want to talk.
Give your family everything. Give them your time.
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting. Now live from coast to coast and around the globe, more real talk, the kind you want, on Liberty Works Radio Network.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the Freedom Above Fortune radio show. My name is Joe Bannister, your host, freedomabovefortune.com and agentfortruth.com. Our guest is Gerhard Link. Gerhard actually grew up and, you know, was a German citizen. He grew up in Germany at the time of Hitler's rise to power and the Nazis' rise to power. And so this is what I consider to be a incredible discussion and opportunity for learning for all of us who didn't live during those times. And what we're basically doing is during the break, Gerhard's kind of filling me in on details, you know, his memory of what happened. And so what we'd next like to talk about, earlier in the show, Gerhard was describing how his father and mother basically were not going along with the program because they had been inspired and realized the evils that the Nazis were about without actually having seen, maybe with their own eyes, but they had a really good gut feeling as to what these people were about. And so the German people around them were treating them like outcasts. And so what I'd like Gerhard to describe is this period in around 1936 when he was 10 years old, and his father and mother actually had basically a premonition that the father could be attacked by the Nazis. So with that as an introduction, Gerhard, could you explain your father and mother's intuition that their time might be short?
Well, they felt, they said, the air is getting thicker and thicker. That means it's getting worse than before, than ever we thought about what happened. So all the enthusiasm of the people around them led to more hatred against their attitude, their non-political involvement, and also their activity toward Christianity in turn. And so they became more and more disliked among the people that they lived with.
So they could see that there was this, I don't know, they just had this intuition of bad things happening. And then you said your father being a craftsman in terms of woodworking.
Yeah.
Talk about the coffin situation.
Oh, that was when they felt something is going to happen that's going to affect our family. When my father was treated by a Nazi member, a dentist, and the dentist injected something in my father's in his gum against my father's wishes. And the next day, when my father had come home, my father became ill, and then he got every other day he got sicker than before. Finally, my mother realized that his veins had turned very dark, and we could see around his neck and his arm. He got dark. The veins got so dark that they almost turned black. So we realized he had blood poisoning. There were two doctors. They came to the door. To this day, we don't know who they were. We don't know who called him. The doctors came, opened the bedroom door, looked inside, and they said, "We don't know what's happening to this man. We don't know what's wrong with this man." And he walked away again. They never looked at him. He walked away from him. And the next day, my father was dead. And so...
So just to recap here, your father had a tooth problem. He went to the dentist. The dentist was a Nazi sympathizer, a supporter of the Nazi party. And while your dad was in the dentist chair, this dentist injected him with a poison.
Yes, that's correct. That's what we learned later. That's how it happened. That's what happened, yeah.
Wow. So, but then you were saying that your father, being an expert woodworker, he had actually made a few coffins as part of his woodworking.
Yeah, because he felt that the time has come when people are going to die. And so... His journeyman, his employees, when he stole the coffin away from him, he said, "This one may be mine. This probably is my own coffin." And a month later, it was.
Oh.
So he had made his own coffin.
So basically, when you were about 10 years old, your mother was made a widow. Your father was murdered.
Yeah.
And while we're on that topic, because I know you told me before the show. What ended up happening to that dentist?
What happened to him?
Yes.
Oh, nothing happened to him. But other people, later on, years later, when the government changed, when the war was over, to the dentist, nothing happened because there was no proof. Nobody had any proof. So when you are a religious fanatic, you have no rights under dictatorship, you know. So,
so your mom, you said you had three brothers and sisters? So there were four.
I had one brother and two sisters. Yeah.
Okay, and your mother was made a widow, and not only was they had been outcast because they were actually courageous enough to stand up to the Nazis.
Yeah.
But then she was left a widow once your father passed away.
That is correct.
And then you were about 10 years old. Now, you said you were drafted when you were about 16.
Yeah,
are there
right.
Any other incidences between the time you were 10 and 16 that you'd like to describe?
Any incidents? Oh, no, I just saw.
Okay, well, why don't we talk then about your being drafted? You also mentioned during the break that you had a very, really no choice, but the choices that you were given... please describe those as far as either being drafted.
No choice. Well, everybody in Germany, everybody had to go through an apprenticeship after school and high school. Everybody had to, and the law at that time was the order that the Germans always talk about order. So you couldn't get drafted until your apprenticeship was completed. And so I was drafted a week after my apprenticeship was completed. 1 week after, right away. And so, then I was drafted, and I lived through a very meager times during my apprenticeship because we did not have much to eat, and we had hardly any money. And apprenticeship means you get about $9 to $12 a month. A month, and for this you have to buy your railroad ticket, and the rest is make ends meet if you can. And so my mother was struggling to feed us kids. And because she was an outcasted woman, The only thing she was allowed to do was washing people's laundry. Washing people's laundry, that's all she was allowed to do. And that's how she had lived. And that's how we had to live. Okay.
So her, I mean, very, very hard work and probably not compensated hardly at all.
No, hardly. Washing sore clothes doesn't make much money, you know, so, but she had no choice.
So tell us about...
And she was a widow, and we were not popular until it was all over, until the Nazi system has been eliminated.
I see. Now, if I'm keeping track of the time period correctly, by the time you were drafted, when you were 16, had you begun to see more persecution of Jewish people?
I saw only a couple of Jewish men the hate against Jews got worse and worse. But we lived in a small town where it's not so much noticed. But I remember if you know the word of Kristallnacht.
Yes, the night of the breaking
I remember
glass.
That when that happened, Kristallnacht. But we only heard about it. And the way they printed about it was all. They printed it in such a way as it was the Jews' fault. This was the Jews. It was the Jews' fault that this Kristallnacht happened.
Wow! So the propaganda machine was really enforced.
Oh yeah, the Nazis did not allow to come to a fire engine, to the fire department to come to these places. They burned the stores. They broke the light, the glass. But no police was allowed to interfere. And then the way they were printed was it was a Jewish rebellion against the Nazis. It's all a lie. I remember I had not been in that town, but I remember that when it happened, people were talking about it, and we just took the hit, you know.
So when did you first realize or know that there were these concentration camps that Jews and other Germans and everyone was being sent to?
We realized that later, concentration camps. The time my father had to die, there was long, long before there were concentration camps. And if there was a concentration camp, it was always said, these are all criminals. These are all criminals. These are criminals. They're just bad people. They deserve to be in jail. And that's why they're there.
I see. So another.
We did not know what was really going on. All the people that were starving there, they were worked to death. We had no idea. It was super top secret. Most people did not know about it.
I see. And was there a special contingent of the military that handled the concentration camps, like the Stalags, which I believe they were called?
The Stalags. That's a name for one of the concentration camps. Yeah.
I see.
But these things are these camps were supervised by the SS. The SS means two SS, yeah, the SS. That means Schutzstaffel. That means they were Hitler's bodyguards.
I see. And so that's why it was easy to maintain the secrecy, because they were the super secret
bodyguards. Oh, yeah, they were absolutely, yeah.
So tell me about once you were drafted, where were you assigned?
Oh, I had one choice. Okay, when I was in high school, the end of my school time, the SS officers came to the sports arena to recruit all the young people, okay? And they were so snobby. Says, you want to serve to fear? Don't you want to serve to fear? You want to be courageous? You want to be in an elite group, don't you? And I didn't want to be in an elite group at all. I want to be in the Luftwaffe.
Gerhard, I'm going to have to interrupt. We've got a break coming up.
Okay.
But I want to get right back to that story.
Okay, go ahead.
Our guest is Gerhard Link, and he actually grew up during the Nazi regime in Germany, and we're hearing his story, his fascinating story. This is the Freedom Above Fortune radio show, and we'll be right back after these messages.
This is the Fox Report. For Shepard Smith, I'm Ron Flatter. It's midnight in Egypt, but the protests continue against President Hosni Mubarak. There's an unconfirmed report the government is about to make a major announcement. Thousands want Mubarak to resign. Fox News Radio's Courtney Keeley reporting from the streets of Cairo.
I've seen barefoot, poverty-stricken young boys. I've talked to well-educated heads of human resources in suits that are out there with the protesters, mothers with their daughters. Everybody that has wanted to has taken to the streets.
And we're hearing some of the protesters pointing fingers of blame at America.
One person said to me, tell the Americans have a democracy, but they're supporting an Egyptian regime, an Egyptian dictatorship. Tell that to your president.
And the White House is listening and reacting. Fox News Radio's Mike Makowicz is live in Washington.
The White House had a few words of warning for the Egyptian government.
The government's response cannot be violence.
White House Press Secretary Robert Gibbs calling on the Egyptian government to address long festering grievances.
That's what the people of Egypt demand. That's what they deserve.
Gibbs also called on Egypt to turn the internet back on and allow freedom of speech. And he said withholding U.S. aid is being discussed. Ron?
President Obama says he's willing to listen to compromise ideas on his health care reforms.
There are going to be times where we say, you know what, this needs a tweak. This isn't working exactly as intended.
The president at a D.C. appearance today, hoping to swing the momentum back his way that Republicans gained with a House vote to repeal health care. Forget about 12,000 today. The Dow loses 166 points. NASDAQ falls 68. S&P 500 drops 22. The Fox 50 down 16. And oil investors reacting to Egypt, bringing the price of crude up 4%. This is the Fox Report. Fair and balanced.
This is Fox News Talk.
Fox and Friends Encore. Encore.
All right, he's one of the greatest baseball players of all time, and now Hall of Famer and legend Cal Ripken Jr. lending his name to an online competition worth millions of dollars to help students get better, not at baseball, but at math. All this information is coming about America. We're ranked in the world when it comes to education and math. We're in the bottom of the top 30 nations. How did that happen, Cal?
Yeah, I mean, we're 25th. I'm not a big stat guy overall because you can interpret it any way, but this stat is really revealing. I love the math. That was one of my favorite subjects. It helps you so much more in life, and we're trying to get that message across through this challenge across the country. Math needs to be more fun, and this game right here will allow you to play a game and compete and have fun. And this national competition is on Tibbetts.com. You can go on, and you can compete state by state. And the benefits are you're going to learn math, but there's a lot of great prizes along with that as well.
Don't miss Fox and Friends weekday mornings on the Fox News Channel.
Winter plays a role to end a hostage situation today in suburban Maryland near Washington.
Minutes after police swarmed the Capital One Bank in Tacoma Park, a robbery suspect emerged using a woman as a human shield, a gun pointed to her head. As the suspect backed away, he slips on the ice. The hostage escapes and gunfire erupts.
Three officers from Tacoma Park, three officers from Prince George's County opened fire on the suspect. Went down.
Tacoma Park Police Chief Edward Corsi says the suspect is dead. One officer was shot in the leg. Two other people were hurt, but those injuries are not life-threatening. In Washington, Jared Halpern, Fox News Radio.
Nelson Mandela is back home in Johannesburg, South Africa.
He's in good spirits. He was joking with us.
Galema Motlanthe is South Africa's deputy president. Mandela is recovering from an acute lung infection. The 92-year-old former president who led the anti-apartheid movement will now receive hospital-type care at home. First, WikiLeaks. Now a former member of the group responsible for that site has created a rival. OpenLeaks would give sources more control of what secrets they reveal and who sees them. Charlie Sheen out of the hospital in Los Angeles.
It's the third time in as many months the 2.5 Men star has been to the hospital. This time he was rushed to Cedars-Sinai with what his publicist called severe abdominal pains, and some media outlets reported that Sheen had a hernia. But others say what Sheen needs now is rehab. He was reportedly having a somewhat long and loud party in his home before going to the hospital. Late last year, Sheen was hospitalized after allegedly trashing his New York hotel room. A CBS network executive recently said they did have concerns about Sheen's off-camera behavior. Jessica Rosenthal, Fox News Radio.
A rubber-faced comic best known in the 60s and 70s has died. Charlie Callis was also a supporting actor on the 70s crime drama Switch. Callis was 83. I'm Ron Platter for Shepard Smith, Fox News Radio.
The viewpoints expressed on Liberty Works Radio Network are not necessarily those of the network, its affiliates, or sponsors. This is Liberty Works Radio Network. Now live from coast to coast and around the globe. More real talk, the kind you want, on Liberty Works Radio Network.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the second hour of the Freedom Above Fortune radio show. My name is Joe Bannister, your host. Websites are freedomabovefortune.com and agentfortruth.com. So gratified to have as my guest Gerhard Link. He actually grew up during the Nazi Germany time frame and actually fought in World War II on the German side. He was a German citizen. And so as we've been doing, it's been working out really well. During the break, he'll kind of reminisce about certain, maybe reminisce isn't the right word, have memories about certain periods that he grew through. And so now we're going to branch into before Gerhard was talking about being drafted. And Gerhard, why don't you start with how you were describing that your desire was to go into what was called the Luftwaffe. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. Basically, the German Air Force, hoping to be a navigator, so that you wouldn't have to shoot at anybody. Because, of course, you were basically conscripted into fighting for a group of people that you didn't agree with at all. So, could you tell about how you let them know you wanted to go into the Luftwaffe and how the German military reacted to that?
Well, the recruiters, they were snipping on me. They did not like for me being unwilling to go in the so-called elite group of soldiers. And when I said I want to go to Luftwaffe, they were laughing at me. They were smirking at me. Said, "Oh, you're just one of these cowards. This is one of these cowards." Anyway, so I didn't manage. I was drafted into the Luftwaffe, and so when I was old enough. I mean, old enough. That means a little over 16. I was drafted then, and then we were shipped to Holland to be trained as flying personnel. Okay.
And
so now.
So at that point, did you still think that you might be trained as a navigator?
Yes, I still had hope very much. Yeah, and then finally ended up in Belgium in Brussels. We were stationed in Brussels when we had hope we're going to get a new order to be trained as a navigator. But at that time, I think it was 1943 or 44, something like that. Suddenly there was a day of no order, everything was quiet, and then finally when one officer came, we were told the Allies had invaded. The Allies had invaded Normandy. The invasion had started. That meant to us, this is the end. So we said to ourselves, the other boys and I said, if this is not ended in 3 weeks, after this invasion, then the war is totally lost. That's what I remember. And after that, we were shipped back to Middle Germany, and one day when we were asked to be in front of center, and then an officer came and said to us, you always want to serve your country in a special way, and so therefore we have adopted you in the infantry. We're going to train you as infantry, as fighting force, ground force. And then we were stripped of our Luftwaffe uniform. We were given infantry uniforms. And then we were shipped to East Prussia, to Poland and Russia, to fight the Russians. That was the end of my navigator career.
Wow, so you completely unprepared. They just basically transferred you in a moment's notice from being in the Air Force to being in the infantry.
Oh, yeah, without a choice. And the Air Force officers had also transferred. They also had no way of knowing ground war, you know. So they were totally inexperienced like we were ourselves.
So would it be fair to say that the German leadership was desperate, that they were even putting Air Force personnel into the infantry?
Of course, not only desperate, they were looking for cannon fodder, you know that?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, they were looking for cannon fodder, whoever they could get, you know, no matter what, how young or old you were. You could be 60 years old, or 16 years old. Whoever could carry a gun was good enough.
Would you say, now, first off, where were you shipped to? Did you say Poland?
Yeah, Poland and Russia, yeah.
And what would you say as far as the people that you served with in the military, both when you were in the Luftwaffe and then when you were changed into the infantry, what was the general, what did most people think? I mean, did everybody see that this is outrageous, or did you have to keep quiet and out of fear that, you know, there was a lot of spies even in the military?
You had nothing to say, Joe. You had nothing to say. You could only obey orders to survive. You could only obey orders.
So you just kept quiet, just did.
Exactly. There were no chaplains. There was no priest, there was no minister, there was nothing. There was absolutely total hidden goddess attitude in everything from morning till night.
Wow, so it must have been a very, I mean, not only lonely, but just mentally draining.
Oh, absolutely, psychologically, mentally, in every way draining. And of course, we were undernourished too, on top of it. Everything, I remember those days. Everything we did had to be done in running. We could not walk. We were not allowed to walk. We had to run all the time.
So tell me, once you were transferred to Poland and Russia, is that what they refer to historically as the Eastern Front?
Eastern Front, yeah. Yes, it's right. Yeah, Eastern Front, that's correct, yeah.
And
yeah.
I know that in, you know, historical documentaries and things, that was about the worst duty that you could get, wouldn't that be?
Exactly. I saw people that were half frozen. They were so badly frozen. I saw one man, for instance. He tried to stand up from the snow. His feet were so frozen. When he tried to stand up, his bones simply broke like glass. He fell down again. He could not get in the last truck. I saw other men that had escaped from a burning tank. He was half burned, and he could not be helped because he was under fire. We couldn't get to him. We had to let him die. I saw this all the time, every day. We were just, we had only one chance to escape from that. That was the only chance we had was to get hit by a bullet, to be able to get to a field hospital, military field hospital, to have a few chance to recover for a few weeks. Till we healed again, then we would be shipped again to the front. There was no chance, there was no help, there was nothing, absolutely. And besides all that, we had no hope for anything anyhow. It didn't make any sense. And some of the other people that were fighting with me, the Russians, literally became insane. I remember one man who refused to fight. He hid himself in a chicken coop where he was discovered in fighting the Russians. He was found in a chicken coop, and they brought him out and led him to the commander. And the commander ordered him to be shot.
And he just immediately shot in front of everyone?
Yeah, he was shot. And there was another man, and I remember he was a volunteer. He was a volunteer from somewhere. And when the Russians attacked, he began to laugh. He started to laugh. He said, ha, 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 ha. And he got up. Instead of laying down, he got up. He walked up to the Russians laughing. And there he died in the bulletin, in the hail of bulletin.
So this volunteer, Gerhard, literally just began to laugh with like he had gone insane.
Yeah, this man really became insane. He was insane, and he started laughing, walking toward the Russians, knowing well what's going to happen to him. He started laughing, and while he was running in the snow toward the Russians, he fell in a hail of bullets by the Russians. He was shot to death, knowing that he would be shot, because he had lost his mind.
Wow, but in a way, he found relief.
In a way, we can say that. However, that was the end of his young life.
So how old would he have been? Like
he was 18 years old, and at the most 19 years old.
Wow. So yeah. How close did you get to these Russian troops? I mean, could you see their faces?
No, I could see. I could not see their faces, but I could see their heads sometimes. So many times, when I was laid in the snow, the snow in front of me got holes from the bullets that were shot at me.
So
many times, the bullets went in the snow and left an eye in front of me. Fortunately, by the God's grace, I was not hit.
So that would show you just how close you came to getting.
Oh, yes, but later on, I was shot at many, many times. I was shot at hundreds of times. But later on, when I was in a field hospital, I took off my clothes because I was full of lice. And it's me all the time. When I took my coat off, I realized I had four bullet holes in my coat. I had four bullet holes in my coat. I went through my coat next to my skin, but I was not hurt.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And didn't realize it until you took your clothes off.
That's right, until I realized. Then I didn't complain about the lice anymore.
Oh, wow. Well, this is an amazing conversation. But we are coming up to a break again.
Okay.
So just let the listeners know, our guest is Gerhard Link. He actually, lived through the Nazi regime in Germany, served in the German military, of course, basically against his will, and tried to make the best of a very, very dangerous and difficult situation. This is the Freedom Above Fortune radio show. hosted by Joseph Bannister, freedomabovefortune.com, and agentfortruth.com. And we'll be right back after.
Is Liberty Works Radio Network enlightening you to the real problems we face in our constitutional republic? Has it helped you to better understand what has to be done to save America from becoming a third world nation? If so, do your part in spreading this voice of truth and enlightenment to your fellow Americans. Join the Liberty Works Radio Network Fellowship. Go to www.libertyworksradionetwork.com for details.
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting.
This is Randall Yearout on Subversion. Just based on current facts before us, our nation's political leaders in elected office and both major parties have embraced policies and legislation subversive to our American form of law and government. Therefore, I think it profitable to visit the wisdom of our founding fathers regarding this kind of behavior. Samuel Adams, regarding spreading the wealth around and centralized control of the economy, said these ideas are, quote, as visionary and impractical as those which vest all property in the crown. They are arbitrary, despotic, and in our form of government, unconstitutional, unquote. These charges could be aimed directly at our president and Congress today. Thomas Jefferson wrote of a central government so strong that it borders on monarchy, these men have no right to office. If a monarchist be in office anywhere, and it be known to the president, the oath he has taken to support the Constitution imperiously requires the instantaneous dismission of such officer, and I hold the president criminal if he permitted such to remain. To appoint a monarchist to conduct the affairs of a republic is like appointing an atheist to the priesthood. Unquote. The situation in America today is socialism for we the people and a political class who think they're monarchs rather than our agents. Congressmen openly insulting citizens exercising their First Amendment rights to redress. Congressmen taxing future generations without their consent. Presidents and judges approving of all this with their silence. These will be our defining years in the eyes of our children and grandchildren, but if we do nothing, we will come to nothing. We need Americans in great numbers to join us.
This constitutional message has been brought to you by the members of the Constitution Party. Visit us at www.constitutionparty.com.
I will not be taking any questions. As of 10 a.m. this morning, the U.S. Treasury Department has issued a full recall of all 776 billion pieces of U.S. currency in circulation. I know this must seem like a blow coming on the heels of this morning's announcement that our federal budget deficit has passed the $800 billion mark. But regrettably, these particular bills were printed with dye containing toxins that, while completely safe at this moment, will become extremely deadly Friday at exactly 12 noon. As a result, we need to act quickly. Okay, tomorrow all Americans will receive a bag like this in the mail. Do not, under any circumstances, attempt to burn or shred the money yourself. The federal government are the only ones that can destroy the money, as we are the only ones with the proper facilities to do so.
This is a massive recall.
We understand that this recall will be hard on U.S. citizens who will have no more money, but we assure you, if you work hard, you will be eventually able to earn it back.
This is in the best interest of the American people.
This dye poisoning causes your internal organs to rot from within and is really painful until you puke up your guts and die. There really is no time to think about this. Just listen to me and send in the money. Thank you.
Peeling back the layers every day with Frank Talk. Channel 4, news, sports, and more. The official home of Glenn Beck.
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting.
Overcome. Pass it on.
When Marlon Shirley was 5 years old, he was in an accident and lost his foot, but he didn't lose his heart.
When you tackle a challenge that you just cannot even fathom tackling, when you accomplish that, the amount of integrity and the will and the heart that you'll get from that experience is what will set you up for your life.
In less time than it took Marlon Shirley to say that, he can now run 100 meters because today he's the world's fastest amputee. Overcoming. Pass it on.
America.
Born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting.
Now live from coast to coast and around the globe, more real talk, the kind you want, on Liberty Works Radio Network.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the Freedom Above Fortune radio show. My name is Joe Bannister, your host. Our guest is Gerhard Link. He grew up during the Nazi regime and actually served during World War II for the German side. He was a German citizen, a German, and was drafted into the war and has told us the most amazing story, one of the most amazing stories I've ever heard. And so we're sharing that with you, the listener. Before the break, we were talking about basically combat. Gerhard was in the Luftwaffe, the German Air Force, and then the German authorities, the German military, transferred him to the infantry and sent him to what was called the Eastern Front, basically the Poland and Russia area, where it was extremely cold, and Gerhard witnessed a great deal of suffering and destruction. But Gerhard, I think we were kind of talking about the Russian troops. You were fighting Russian troops. How close did you actually get in proximity to the Russian fighters?
How close? Well, the thing was, in the snow, the Russians wore white, white painted helmets and white clothes, and the Germans also had white uniforms because of camouflage in the snow. But we could not see exactly how far they were from us, but the front line was always changing. Every day there was sometimes a half a day we were moving out, we were moving somewhere else. We were most of the time retreating, and they were as close to us as sometimes 20 yards, sometimes 100 yards. I don't recall exactly. It was sometimes in the snow, it's hard to say. It used to be. Sometimes I disobeyed orders. That's why I'm still alive. I was given an order, for instance, to go in a position so I could look down the hill. And I refused to go out. And so I said to myself, if I go up front there so I could look down the hills, the Russians going to see me as a silhouette, and they really pepper me with bullets. And I did not go up front, and I was afraid I would be shot from the SS behind because I didn't obey. But at that time I was not shot. I was spared being treated as a traitor. So anyway, these things, these kind of fears, never happened. They happened all the time. It never started. It always happened to us. We're always full of fear. Fear and hunger. And fear and hunger, no food, a lack of ammunition, and all kinds of devastating situations that we could not really describe. Sometimes I was standing of a Russian tank. There was standing just 15 or 20 yards in front of me. There had been hit. And the men, the Russians were still inside the tanks, and some German guy went inside and took the cigarettes out from the dead Russian soldiers. Nobody thought about anything. Nobody thought of anything. It was just ugly war, ugly war. Okay, go ahead, Joe.
Now, you told me also during the break about you believe that you were probably shot at, or at least bullets went by you thousands of times, and tell us about how you knew that, and then what things you saw in the snow and in your own clothing.
Oh, yeah, I saw, yes, I mean, I saw the bullets. I saw bullets hitting the snow in front of me, left and right, and how the bullets were, how bullets were hitting close by, fortunately, the bullets didn't hit me. But one time I saw that so many bullets hitting the snow left and right in front of me, then I pulled my right leg up. I bent my right leg up to the knee as good as I could, so I could get a foothold in the snow, prepare myself to jump back out of this dangerous situation. And eventually, after some 20 minutes or so, I think it was about 20 minutes, I got a foothold by my right leg so I could jump back. And the moment I started to move, the bullets came in the snow again. But I was able to run back fast enough to escape the bullets. And then I felt safe. Safe is a ridiculous word. So I felt out of harm's way. I was not out of harm's way. I was just in a different position where I was shot at again. But at that time, other people were also shot at. And one thing was always happened. The Russians were always giving a lot of vodka. They were always drunk. The Russians were always drunk, and that's why they were so courageous.
So that certainly affected their fighting ability. I mean, you could tell that they were visibly drunk.
Oh yeah. We saw that they were drunk. They were given a lot of vodka. They were given a lot of vodka, so they would be courageous to attack us. You know, we heard them screaming, "Ray, Ray, Ray!" Hear them screaming all the time.
Wow. Now contrast the Russians, and they're basically the Russian culture was such that they got their soldiers drunk to be more courageous or maybe more foolhardy.
Yeah.
But you said on your side, what was the thing that was motivating you guys? Because you talked about what was behind you that was motivating you.
Oh, what was motivating us? We were not motivated at all. We were pushed. We were pushed by orders. We were pushed for fear of being shot by our own people.
And that was the particular contingent of the German military known as the SS, correct?
Yeah, it was what the German army was. They were what we call the SS was. The monster that was behind everything. There was always the threat of wait till this S comes. Wait till this S comes. There was always this fear. The enemy in front and the enemy in front of us and this S behind us. This was the motivation. We had no vodka. We had just fear to survive, any way we could survive, we would survive.
So the SS, the officers in the SS and the people in the SS, they would have to be especially bloodthirsty and merciless, wouldn't they?
They were indeed, absolutely, yeah.
Did you see people in your brigade, in your infantry brigade, shot by the SS?
I saw one man who was considered a traitor. He couldn't really see it, but he was one time we had to stand in an open square. And they brought his man out in front of everybody. And there it was, one of us, one of our boys, you know. He brought his man out, and he says, shot him in front of us.
So I could see how that would be, make everybody fearful.
Exactly. Yeah. He never forget pictures like that, you know.
Now, so tell the listeners how you told me about the, you know, you said you were shot thousands of times, but there was a point when you had to change your military uniform, your clothing, because of lice. But what did you notice when you took your clothing off?
Wait a minute. What was it again? I'm sorry.
Oh, no problem. You told me the story about when you took your uniform off.
Yeah.
You noticed holes in the uniform.
I had bullet holes in my coat. Yeah.
Yeah, and you, was it two or four or?
There were two bullet holes that went through my coat, and there were four holes in the fold.
I see. So basically, two bullets entered and exited your clothing.
Exactly, on my side, yeah.
And would have been just centimeters away from your splash.
Yeah, but other bullets ended in front of two or three centimeters in front of me in the wall of a house one time, and I had figured the Russians are in front of me, but in fact, they were on the right side. They were on the right side of me, and I couldn't see them. And there was a bullet. There was a machine gun bullet going right next to in front of my nose, and I quickly ducked. There was another close. Anyway, there were many close calls. I don't remember all.
Wow. Now, were the Russians how do I say this? They were just matter of fact. They just did the business, or were they really, really ruthless?
What was the first thing it was? They were what?
Did they just, you know, do the job? In other words, you know, they were out there. They were supposed to kill people. They would just kill people, or did they have like a special, you know, evil, malicious? You know, it's one thing if you're just a soldier and you're.
Yeah. No, they were not gallant. They were not soldiers. They were just beasts. They were just beasts. They were so mean. They were like animals. And of course, so were the German SS group, was the same.
So, what was it like? Was it below zero in terms of the cold? Was there a lot of wind?
It was always below zero. It was very cold. I froze my feet and my fingers, my earlobes, my teeth. I lost part of my toes. All my toenails turned black. All my fingernails turned black. My teeth became loose. My earlobes went black because of it was so cold. We were all the time. We were never in the house. We were running always in the snow from here to there, from that hill to that valley. We were never in the house. So one time, I remember. One second. One time I was in. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
One time I was standing guard at night. We were always asked to stand two hours at night. Every 2 hours, 2 hours guard, 2 hours sleep, 2 hours guard, 2 hours sleep. Which was a horrible thing to sleep. And then break 2 hours, and then break in, break out all the time. I was standing at the garden wall with my back against the wall, and I was suspicious because it was so quiet there, and the snow was coming down. And finally, the man that was supposed to release me came out, and I said to him, "Watch out, buddy. It's so quiet. This is suspicious to me. Watch out. It's very quiet. It's too quiet. There's something going on we don't see."
Gerhard Link, and he actually fought in World War II as a German soldier. And this is the Freedom Above Fortune radio show. My name is Joe Bannister, your host. FreedomAboveFortune.com and AgentForTruth.com. And we'll be right back after these messages.
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on. Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting.
Persistence. Pass it on. Some people would call him a loser. He ran for state office. He was beaten. He started a business. He failed. He ran for Congress. He lost. He was nominated for Vice President Abraham Lincoln. He lost again. But he knew only those who never tried are the real losers. Persistence. Pass it on.
America. Born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on. Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting.
Now live from coast to coast and around the globe, more real talk, the kind you want, on Liberty Works Radio Network.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the final segment of the Freedom Above Fortune radio show. Our guest has been Gerhard Link. Amazing story of living through Nazi Germany, growing up in the prior with the prior government, the Weimar Republic, and just telling us an amazing story about what it was like to live during those days.
So I warned him. I said, "Keep your back against this wall." And I went inside the house, and I was looking for some bread in that house, and I lit a match, and I found some piece of bread which I took quickly to myself, and I lay down in the store, and as I laid it down in the store, the man next to me woke up, and he woke up and said, "What are you doing?" He said, "I have to go pee," and I did not know that the man has a he had a Belgian pistol, and he went to the door. He opened the door. He's Rusky. He began to yell. And he began to yell in his suit right away. The Russians had seen the match that I had lit to find bread, and they followed me into that house, and there were six Russians in the door with the hand grenades in the hands, and the friend who woke up because of me, he killed them all. Otherwise, I would have not survived. And we jumped through the windows head first and escaped again.
Wow.
Yeah, we jumped out in the darkness, in the night, the snowfall. We were some head first through the glass and out. Yeah, we escaped again. These things happen all the time, my friend.
Wow. Well, we've got a break, and then we just have one more segment coming up.
Okay.
Our guest is, again, during the break, Gerhard was able to kind of fill me in on some details. As he was talking about before, about how cold it was there in the Eastern Front, they would do anything to try to warm themselves, and there was hardly ever any opportunity to do so. But Gerhard, tell us briefly about what you called a domain, basically a large farm, and how you warmed your feet.
We felt these people had fled before they could break their bread for so many farmhands. So we took our shoes off, and because we felt that door was about maybe 3-4 inches high from the floor moving, and of course the yeast would made it bigger and bigger, and so we stuck our feet in through the crust, and because it was warm, we took our shoes off. When we were asked to leave again, I couldn't get back in my shoes. My feet were snow white and hard, and my toes were all, my nails were always were all white, and then they called the medic to come and help me to get my shoes. I couldn't get in, so they wrapped my feet in cotton, and then they threw me in an ammunition truck with some other dead people and wounded people, and moved me back to a train, and the train moved to Vienna in Austria, which was fortunate for me. So I could, in Vienna, I could breathe again, and at least I was back in civilization.
So there was, these farmers would customarily put bread dough throughout their barn, and you came across this farm, and trying to get warm, you saw this warm bread dough, and you and many other soldiers stuck your feet in it to warm yourselves.
Yeah.
And then because of being able to warm up a little bit, then your feet got very swollen.
Yeah, right.
And then a medic from the German army basically wrapped your feet in cotton.
Mm-hmm.
And then you were put on a truck with a bunch of basically dead bodies and other injured soldiers.
Mm-hmm.
And then put on a train to Vienna, Switzerland.
Yes.
Okay, so take
it. And a train to Vienna, Austria.
Oh, Austria, I'm sorry.
So I ended up in Austria, in Vienna, in a hospital.
And then you said there was about 800 wounded soldiers.
This hospital was filled with 250 beds, but there were over 800 soldiers, wounded soldiers in that hospital. The toilets were overflowing. The hospital itself was in bad condition, but the nurses were kind, the Austrian nurses. They put a framework over my feet so the blankets would not rest on my pus and blooding toes. So that's why I was in my feet began to smell terribly, because the meat that was black, the meat that was snow white turned now black. Every piece of meat in my body that was white turned now black. And so some of my toes rotted away. Fortunately, my earlobes had to turn black. They changed colors again, but they did not fall off. And my teeth also, I did not lose anymore. My fingertips that were black gradually became colorful again. So gradually, every day I gained a little bit of my own health back in the Vienna hospital. And then one night, a nurse called, "Can anybody use a typewriter?" I said, "I can." So I remember she said, go down to her corridor to the company doctor and report to him." So I talked to this doctor. He was an officer. Fortunately, he was an officer from the army, not from the SS. So I realized when I talked to him that he spoke my own dialect. So I thought maybe I have an in with him. So he asked me to write ambulatory leaves for all the soldiers that can still walk. So I asked him, at the middle of the night, "Sir, would you mind to consider to give me an ambulatory leave too?" And so he did. And then the next morning came, I had my ambulatory leave. I went down to the cellar. I was looking for any kind of uniform that I could find in the cellar. Finally found something. I put it on. It was the day before a man died in his clothes. I put him on again, no matter what. And then I walked in Vienna I walked to all five railroad depots in Vienna. finally found a train that would leave toward, and leave toward Munich and Stuttgart, and I got a train and I hid myself under the bench in that train car so they wouldn't find me because I was running west. And they said, no, West is not good again. West is not good, so I have to go there. So there, in a train, I hid myself without any food or anything until I came home to my area where I was raised and born. And there, finally, the last section, I think 12 kilometers, I walked from tree to tree with my cane. I walked from tree to tree, and I called, when I came to the house, I called my sister. She didn't recognize me because I was so skinny. And she said, my sister went inside. She said, Mama, there's a soldier out there that called my name. They called my name. It was me. My mom came down, pulled me up the stairs. They gave me some wine to survive me and survive. And then I slept for another 2 days, or 2 or 3 days. And then, by then, the allies had come in. And I had to report to the city hall because my mom said, you have to go, son. Son, you have to go. I'm going to pray for you. I'm going to go on my knees and I pray for you. And she meant this. She really meant it. She really, there was not just talking. She really did go on her knees and pray for me. When I went to the city hall, all the soldiers that were lined up, they were shipped in Dutch trucks, shipped away to a, driven away to a prisoner of war camp. When the French officer saw me, he said to me, how old are you? I said, I'm not 18 years old yet. He looked at me up and down, he looked down and he said, what happened to your feet? What's the matter with your feet? I said, I was too long in the snow outside and I froze my feet. He looked me up again, he said, it is kind, God bless him. He said to me, sir, go home. Go home. I was never made a prisoner of war. I was walking home again. And I was home to my mom. Everybody else was shipped away. Everybody else was shipped away except me. And so, then there were Polish slave laborers who had seen me come home, and they said to me, the slave laborers were free. They had free reign to do what they want to do. So somebody said they had a new body. No, they had bodyguards installed, older men with white armbands guarding the city, enforcing the curfew, to be home, everybody home by 6 o'clock in the house. So they said, my neighbor said, the slave laborers are free now. They're gonna come and lynch your son. They said to my mom, they're gonna come tonight and lynch your son. Yeah. So my mom looked out the window, she called the bodyguards. She said, men of town, the slave laborers are coming tonight to kill my son, to lynch my son. They already lynched the teacher, his former teacher. So the guards of the city stayed all night in front of our house, so the slave laborers did not come. So I was spared again.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah, so I was spared again, and I was here. I'm now living in California, in this precious country, and I cannot tell enough about what God brought me through, how thankful I am for this country. I witnessed my God in the banks. I witnessed in the churches. I witnessed in the streets. But many times I felt I'm not heard. People are full of drugs and stuff like that and abuse their bodies. And here I am thankful to be here in this country, to live with my family. My son is an officer in the Air Force. My daughter is wonderful in ministry, doing a ministry in a crisis pregnancy center, saving babies from getting aborted. And I don't know what else I can tell you now.
Well, Gerhard, I'm just so grateful that you could share at least some of your story. I know we could go on forever and really tire you out, but we're basically coming to the end of the show.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to thank you so much for spending time with us. And, maybe if keep your strength going real strong, we could have you back, talk about some more. But I think you did a great job of summarizing an incredible younger years in the span of a two-hour radio show. So we do have the end of the show coming up. I want to thank you very much for coming on the show.
Mm-hmm.
And
you're welcome.
We'll have you back again sometime.
Okay,
so,
thank you.
This is the Freedom Above Fortune radio show hosted by Joe Bannister. Websites are freedomabovefortune.com and agentfortruth.com. And we'll see you all next week.